This podcast is brought to you by the Lucky Education Consultancy and Placement Firm and Alembic Global. Kuzopo and welcome to Hello from Bhutan. I am Namgizam. Today on this episode, I am welcoming back Dr. Dojo Onchu. He's been here on the podcast before as well. I'm welcoming him back today to talk about Bhutanese identity, culture. And I also want to begin by congratulating you, sir, on winning the Dissertation of the Year in Washington, D.C. It's such a big achievement for a scholar. He is an award-winning academic and scholar and an expert in communications. I do turn to him for advice and guidance related to communications, about things that I write or say, and he's always given me great insight and advice, and I hope to get the same from you today, which
welcome.
We can share with the audience of Hello from Bhutansa. Yeah. So, you know, I just mentioned your dissertation, which is really speaks about the sacred chronotope of Bhutanese identity, spirituality, and community, sir. In fact, it's titled that as well, sir. You've written a lot of articles, actually, based while researching for this dissertation, if I'm correct, sir. If you could share a little bit about what you've discovered about Bhutanese identity, who we are as a people.
Yeah, so I started off with this inquiry, like what makes us Bhutanese? How do we identify ourselves as Bhutanese? What brings us together as Bhutanese? And I know it's a very slippery topic, you know, the question of cultural identity, self-identity. These are very, very slippery topic. But I had the luxury of, putting my head on the chopping block of the academia. I had the time, and of course, I had a great place to be, which is University of Macau, and an excellent, ideal professor who was my supervisor, Professor Todd Sandel. I explored this very difficult question, but a question that we keep asking nevertheless. The research intersects between various disciplines, so it's not just sociology, but also technology, society, cultural studies, and spirituality. And again, it was a blessing to have a supervisor who allowed me to, venture into these other disciplines, not just stick to my discipline, which is the social science. It's a question we all ask. When I was asking that question, I lived in remote communities, what I term as the traditional community. So basically, I found there are three different communities in Bhutan: the traditional communities, the hybrid communities, hybrid meaning people like from my generation, who use technology, who are in contact with the outside world. The traditional community does not have much contact or much interaction. And then the third community I call the cyber community, which are people, younger people, who are mostly on the social media and use the technology at most. So I realized we have three different worldviews, three different ways to identify ourselves. To sort of wrap the question, what identifies ourselves as a Bhutanese? Bhutanese generally find ourselves identifying not in terms of our personal identity as much as the social identity. So I'm known by who I am, or whose son I am, which family I come from, which region and language I speak. So that is my social identity. Then we tend to extend, Bhutanese, we tend to extend our social identity not just to people, but also to our protector deities, to our bird deities. So what is your Chesung? If you imagine identity, if you draw a circle of yourself as an identity, in the closest you have your family. You tend to have your community, the village that you were born, the people with whom you grew up with. those also play a huge role in how we identify ourselves. Then, interestingly, as I was saying, the protector deities, the Kela, you know, also play a role. So we embrace the Kela, the protector deities, our birth deities, like our family, like an extension of ourselves. And that is, I think, very interesting. And it was one of the things that I discovered from my dissertation.
So if you could also explain, what does the word chronotope mean? Because not everybody is familiar with this unless you're an academic.
So basically, when I was trying to understand the different types of identities that we have here in Bhutan among different people of different generations, when I was trying to explain that, then I came across this concept called chronotope. So chronotope literally means, chrono means time, and tope means place. So chronotope was coined by a Russian philosopher called Mikhail Bakhtin, where he says that the time and place is inseparable in the way we view the world. So he meant it, or he used it mainly for literary, as a literary tool. And that was a literary tool, means how to explain the different genre of literary works. So let's say now you're writing about the epic of Lingesar, then your mind is immediately taken to that medieval period, you know, of warriors, of kings, and the medieval period. So whatever characterizes the medieval period. So you are taken to that time and space. Likewise, and if you are going to watch the next episode of the Star Wars movies, you are already prepared to see, you know, flying rockets and spaceships flying at the speed of light. You are going to see a lot of extraterrestrial. So then that's another time space. Okay. Now what I coined for Bhutan is called the concept of sacred chronotope, and which means that when we conduct, or when we participate in festivals, sechus or rimros or a ceremony in a temple like in Dodedra or in Tango, then we are drawn into a sacred time space that is very, very unique. In the sense that you don't question, for instance, that you don't question the time. So for instance, you are subconsciously seeking blessing from Guru Rinpoche, who existed 1200 years ago. You are praying for a future that has not even come, maung palo, kepa matong bado, let me, angalo ken barche, do semche thamche gipen, so may I, benefit all sentient beings for eons to come, So the time is then expanded from, past infinity to minus infinity. The place, you are there in Tango, and then you are in that sacred space. And I find that that we in Bhutan have that unique opportunity to be in that sacred chronotope. And why I came with that is something that I noticed, that families were conducting rituals at home, Loche, Loche, and they would do a Facebook live or a WeChat live with their members who are living abroad in Australia, India, Thailand, and they will also feel that sacred chronotope of being in a Loche, and they would pray to the deities, they would pray to their god in Kela, and so this is again, another way of being Bhutanese. You don't question, I'm in Australia and like Bhutan is so far away, will the deity even see me? You don't accept that, right?
That's true.
So the space is completely, there is collapsed. So the sacred chronotope, yeah, we don't question the time, we don't question the space, we create that that chronotope.
I think another example I would give, which also inspired you, was our National Day, and how I was there in Jangmutang, and you saw that video as well. How all of us were singing to His Majesty the King, which you also pointed out is unprecedented.
Yes.
Because Bhutanese don't do this, right?
Yes.
There was, and then there were Bhutanese joining us.
Yes.
From elsewhere in the world that felt like they were a part of this.
Yes, yes.
So that is another experience that you would say is uniquely Bhutanese.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is another, again, a brief time space, a brief sacred chronotope that we have created during the National Day, and which actually attracted me as a scholar. And of course, I can write a whole academic article on that. It may mean many things to many people. I can give various interpretations, and I hope I will have some time to do that.
Yes, sir.
But the most important thing was that there was completely again a collapse of all the formalities, all the distance, all the hierarchy, you know. And it was very beautiful to see that, you know, His Majesty was there without any security details. The kids were flashing their phones. You know, you're never supposed to flash your lights, you know, or a torch on someone's face. You are doing that. And it means, and I just mentioned that, like this generation or the next generation is very different to my generation. And I have got to accept that, you know. And I should not be downgrading them or pushing them away or trying to make them us. We are different. You know? Yes, it was a very, 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 I would say a very, it was a defining moment for us as a country, as a nation.
You've identified the sacred chronotope as something that's a unifying element for Bhutanese,
yes,
right,
yes,
sir?
Yes.
But what else do you think unites us as Bhutanese, as in, because we do come together, I mean, as Bhutanese, no matter where we are in the world,
yes,
sir.
So I mean, we all know, you know, the institution of monarchy unites us. So that is a foregone conclusion. I didn't touch that in my work, in my dissertation. But I wanted to see what are the other individuals, institutions, and events that brings us together. That, you know, and one thing that I noticed during that time, I was doing my field work between 2017 and 2019. Sanjay Gelson, you know, caught my attention. How he brought the whole country together, you know. I mean, who doesn't know Sanjay Gelson? You know, old, young, you know, engineer, civil servant, private sector, monks, you know. And so I just realized how sportsmen or sports people can bring nations together. So I was very happy when Sanjay received the medal at the National Day. I think I sent a congratulatory message on his Instagram feed. Of course, the other interesting unifying factor are our deities, the protector deities. And I wrote a paper for that at the Virginia conference in 2022. And very powerful unifying force, you know, to the extent, again, when I was talking about how deities are considered as a part of the family.
Right.
So my daughter is here on holidays from Australia. I was out of town. Even before she called me, she went up to Dejinbu and, you know, reported there.
To Abgenge.
Yeah, Abgenge. I'm back. You
know, we all report him before we leave as well.
Yes. So she is. I would say, like, you know, I don't know. We sought the support of Dejinbu. So that's how she got her name, Dejin, from there.
Right, sir. Right.
And so she reports there. Even before she calls me or calls my other family. So she feels closer to Dejinbu than any one of us, you know.
I see.
And that much is of importance, how deities unite. Taksang unites. Parot Sechu unites. You know, Thimbu Sechu unites. You know, Parot Sechu.
Right, sir.
I mean, you see how many people from all ethnic groups, you know, go to Parot Sechu.
So, and now to Dohachukemba.
Yeah, so these are other unifying factors that we need to maintain, sustain, you know, reinforce, especially in light of the out-migration from Bhutan.
Right, sir. Which also now brings me to how we have the same kind of faith in our monarchs. Mm-hmm. So we place this same unquestioning, unwavering faith in our monarchs.
Yes.
And now we're in an interesting situation in time and space, mm-hmm. if I may say that again. The Gyalpo Mindfulness City, something that has never been done before by Bhutan. And now it's been shared with the entire country. It was shared with the entire country on National Day by His Majesty the King. And it's interesting because there are people who, despite loving the monarch, unwavering loyalty, feel that, oh, but I don't know if this is what I want. So there's this certain, but there are many who are uniting as well. So what do you, how do you view this as, with all of your experience and expertise?
Oh, I mean, you know, our monarchs have always always had bold decisions in the past. The coming of democracy, you know, before 2008, how much like we were so apprehensive about elections and political parties and democracy coming in, you know, that we were like, you know, not we personally, but in many public meetings, how people were pleading with our fourth king, our fourth Drukgyalpo, like, please, like, we don't want democracy. Like, do we really need? Why now? You know, can we, like, we're okay. But the thing is, yeah, our monarchs see the future more than us, and that's the first thing that I think we need to recognize. Coming back actually to how you know how our monarchs unite us is one thing that I noticed in my during my research or field works is that, you know, many countries have national symbols, you know, so Americans they rally around their flag, you know, the Japanese they rally around their emperor. So many countries have these, you know, the ties also around their king. Again, what I found was that here we not only rally around our monarchs, we feel the monarchs as an extension of our family. So it's as if like our king is the head of the family of every family in Bhutan. So we would have that's evidenced by the fact that in each home we have the portraits of the monarchs, right? But do you have in your village, I mean in your house, do you have a national flag? You won't have. Do you have a picture of the national bird? You won't have. Yeah. So the national symbols, when it comes to we are actually united, or we rally around our king, first of all, as a nation. But not only that, we also see our king as an extension of my family, your family, or his family. And I think that actually also is how we Bhutanese identify ourselves, you know, the unique ways of being Bhutanese, you know. Yeah. So actually, I'm thinking of turning my dissertations into writing. Yeah, what makes us Bhutanese? Yeah.
Because you have so much content there.
Yeah.
And not everybody can sit down with the book and read it. So it's better if you bring out like bite-sized articles.
And the question actually was inspired by Zongzi Kense's short article, what makes us not a Bhutanese? And that was the question. And then I was thinking, what makes us Bhutanese?
So these are the unifying symbols, unifying practices,
forces,
that make us, and the forces that make us uniquely Bhutanese. Bringing our conversation back to the Gyalpo Mindfulness City, because it's really on everybody's mind. You and I just traveled there as well. For me, I think after this experience of this tour, as it were, of what the Mindfulness City would be, the land that we saw, I felt like it was so sacred as well. You're talking about how His Majesty the King is like an extension of a family member to us, or like the head of the family. Has decided on something very important. Now the rest of the family has been taken on board as well, right? All of us have been taken on board. It's not just you and I. Like the entire nation has been taken on board. So how do you see this playing out in terms of our shared identity, or what makes us unique?
So I think I mentioned in my article in Quinzel,
which came out today.
Yeah, that first of all, I think this was conceived by His Majesty mainly for our young people, because we have a lot of young people, and somehow our job market, the opportunities market, you know, have not kept attuned with how many young people are coming into the job market.
Mm.
So I think this will address that. Mm. And that I think was one of the first things that has sort of pushed His Majesty to conceive this vision. Then of course there are other ramifications, and there are other things that will come by as collateral influences.
Mm.
And the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, just because we have recently graduated from the list of LDC, I think this may signify our coming of age as a nation, as a country, you know, joining the middle income level countries. It is where I guess we will have to exert a little bit of our own national interest. Unfortunately, during COVID, we have seen every nation protects their own interest.
Sure.
The US was not willing to share the vaccines with the world initially. India did better. You know, they shared a lot of vaccines with other developing countries. So I think we have to as a second reason, I think we need to now protect, develop, or secure our national interest more than ever. Because there is no guarantee that another COVID will not come as we encroach into the wilderness, as we get more globalized, as travels become widespread. So viruses and bacteria are going to travel, and so there is no guarantee. In fact, if you look at the time span of global pandemics from the 14th century, when the first plague was, in recorded history, the time gap between two pandemics have been becoming shorter and shorter, or you know, closer and closer. So we need to secure our national interest. Then of course the other point that I raised was that that since 2008 somehow we have not been not having a common goal, a shared purpose, you know. So civil servants have been going on their own, the young people have been going on their own, the engineers think they're building the country, the doctors think they're saving the country, you know. So we're all all over the place somehow, you know. That has been one of the impacts of democracy and the political, you know.
Also Western education.
Western education, yeah. So I think now we have the opportunity to come together to make this, project, to make this mindfulness city project a success. And that could be one of our very important collective national goal in the next short to medium term.
I think it's so important, with the context of global warfare, and a lot of things that are going on in the world, indigenous communities, you take the examples of the indigenous communities in the Amazon, right? Their relationship with nature, with life, with people around them, the respect that is there. But these have it.
Yeah.
And it comes from being a collectivist society.
Yeah.
And I think, although I really do believe in the pursuit of individual aspirations, but I also feel as Bhutanese that it's so important to remember our roots, who we are as a people.
Yeah.
And we are a collectivist people.
Yes.
We reach out to help each other in times of need. Like yesterday, I posted about the boy who needs blood in Kolkata, and it was shared so many times by everybody because we want to reach out to somebody, because it's as if he's one of our own, you know? We don't think, but like, it's being eroded. So it's a great, I think, in a way, not just is it a national aspiration, but it's also, I think, a national reminder of who we are, the Guildford Mindfulness City, to return to our roots.
Yeah, I mean, we are, as you mentioned, a very collectivist society, and I hope it remains that way, because, you know, for whatever reasons. And and this has been proven many times in recent years, you know, how many people have sort of come together to get a kidney transplant or heart surgery, or, you know, to get those two twins separated in Australia. How people, you know, within hours or within a few days, like, we would raise 4 million, 5 million.
Yes.
And that actually speaks a lot about who we are. You know, we are a communal society. We are a collectivist society. And I think this sense of community and national unity is something that is very important. And that's also the reason why I delved on that, because we know exactly then now, from my research work, we know exactly which institution, which sector, which part of the society, which part of our culture we need to protect, you know. So, for instance, one of the recommendation I made was that perhaps places like Takpar or Takchang should be governed by a separate act, you know, with all the do's and don'ts, and then it is made as a national monument, you know, that, so that we it remains that way. Because it unites us as a country. Similarly, other important places.
So what do you think would be the future of Bhutan? I mean, we've already touched upon how we're a collectivist society, and we must return to this. Going forward, we move forward as a collective society, as a communal. We are a communal people, and we move ahead like that. What do you think? Because you identify three types of communities in Bhutan with your research. So you have the traditional, hybrid, and your cyber community, right? So you do you see... Do we overlap is the question. Will we overlap as we move towards the future? Will we continue in this relationship? Will it change? What do you think?
I think one of the things that we need to do, we meaning the government, the society, and as individuals, is never to forget who we are, what is our story, the Bhutanese narrative, you know. And that's that is, I think, something that we need to keep asking, we need to keep talking, we need to keep sharing. Where do we come from? What makes us Bhutanese? What are the cultural, social cultural practices that that keeps us together? What are some of the other tools and instruments? And I also wrote about language, the need to preserve the national language Dzongkha, and to, you know, and to make your children speak Dzongkha or your mother tongue when they are small, because that's where when they get you know, everything registered in their brain, and then that would form their worldview. So even if you're in Australia, make sure that you teach Dzongkha or your national or your mother tongue Changla to your child, because when they grow up, their worldview will be what the worldview that we share here. Other things like technology, economy, are things that should sort of support this Bhutanese story. That, I think, it's the most important thing that we need to do, not to put technology or economy or bureaucracy in front of the Bhutanese story, but rather let these institutions, these tools, these mechanisms support the Bhutanese story to be taken forward into the future. And that is, I think, the most important job, duty, responsibility that each one of us have as Bhutanese.
All right, sir. I think that's a really important message for anybody who's listening or watching this podcast. I don't think the intention is to make you feel very, very sad, but it's really, I think, a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we will lose this if we don't act
right now. It's very easy.
It's very easy
to lose anything.
Right, sir.
Very difficult to build something.
Right, sir. So what we have, let's not lose it.
Yes.
Lastly, let's come back to you saying if I could give you some time to talk about the various interpretations you've had of what transpired on National Day. So very, if you could just share that with us, sir.
Yeah, of course. For me, the National Day is just actually to listen to the Royal Address, which I did.
That's the highlight for all of us.
Yeah, which right, I did. And then in the evening, I was just taking a stroll in Northern Lam, because I heard that they have closed the traffic, so I like streets, walking streets.
Mm.
And then I was posting some stories and pictures on my Instagram feed, when I came across several Instagram stories, you know, yours, Harik Hamba, who reposted you, Dankers, and a few other stories. And there I saw the whole whole stadium singing to one song.
Mm.
And then I saw His Majesty Ngelse in the mist, surrounded by the young people, and then they had turned their back to the stage. They were all instead there,
Mm.
Yeah, that was a very, I think, one of the, it will remain as, I think, one of the most beautiful moments, in the history of, modern National Day celebrations. And that actually, I was stunned. I was like, I literally froze there, And then later, of course, I was inquiring with friends, and I, what's this, I mean, who wrote this song? Can I meet that? And then we had Tanis on the trip, and I congratulated him. He was very emotional when I told him. And then, he was like, "What? Like, even you, you got." So it was a very, and I think that is something that it gives us a lot of hope.
Mm.
It gave me a lot of hope, and that's actually how I ended my article. That there is something burning here. That something is called hope.
Mm.
And so as an individual, I'm a very optimistic person. I try to see things or in a positive light. I don't let negativity ruin my life or my day. It's not easy. It's difficult. From the last National Day and from the recent trip down to Kelefu, now it gives me hope. I made my daughter read my article this morning, read this, because that's for you. It's for them.
Mm.
They need to take ownership of it.
Mm.
They need to, sweat.
Mm.
And we are there to just, support them, cheer them up from the sideline.
Mm.
And I think that's what people from my generation should do. I encourage them.
Mm. I was thinking, because I've been asked to write a piece on this, and I was thinking how your generation had the privilege of being a part of Gross National Happiness, mm. right? A part of Bhutan's democratic transition. And now us, the younger generation, we have the opportunity to be part of the building of a dream unlike any other in the world.
Yes.
And I think it's such a privilege and an honor, and we need to embrace this and I think get behind it.
And secure the economic base of our country.
Yes, economic
that
base.
That falls on your generation.
Yes, yeah. And we will support you. And
yeah.
I think that is what we want to do. I'm glad that I had this conversation with you, sir. Thank you so much for sharing this. I think National Day will remain like the most memorable, I think among like the highlights of my life.
Yes.
To be able to experience
yes.
that and to unite behind somebody that we love. And we revere. And I think it also needs to be said that nobody forced us to learn the song, sir. It's not the national anthem of Bhutan.
Yes.
Right? It's just a wonderful, beautiful song of love for His Majesty the King, And all of us know it. And it's a sign that we are still on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we'll continue down this right path. And you will definitely see much more content, not just this conversation on what is going to happen in terms of the Kelefu Mindfulness City.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely conversations around identity is going to pick up. Who are we? What is my dream? What is our dream? So I'm looking forward to all those conversations. But thank you so much, sir, for always being so patient,
for
always...
Thank you for having me.
Because never, I mean, I ask you the same questions again and again, and you never get tired of answering these questions. But thank you so much, sir. And I look forward to all your opinion pieces and your articles that are coming, that are forthcoming. Thank you so much to everybody who's watched us and listened to us. Thank you so much, sir.